Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello.
But I don't see mine. Huh.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I must apologize because we've had some technical difficulty. You know, with these modern techie things, these things can happen all of a sudden. So I want to welcome you this evening to the Backyard Labrish and ask you to bear with me while I fiddle with getting it right. Okay, I think I have all things going right now. So, first of all, I want to tell you that it is my pleasure to return. I've been away for 2 weeks, and I have just been quite anxious for this evening. But what had happened is that there's been terrible weather in my part of the world. So that's one of the reasons why I got on the board and then was knocked off by lightning. So I'm just getting back on. I hope that some of my callers will call back in. But regardless of that, I would like to go on with the show so that when the callers come by later on, or if there's anyone listening online, they can pick up right here. So good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Margaret Marshall. And I want to welcome you to the Labrish. Today is July 12th, and we have been off the air for 2 weeks, and I have just been exuberant about returning with this special show tonight, because if you're on my list, you will see that because of Dr. Joy Lumsden's work and dedication, someone that we should really all have known about have just come to my attention. So I have been anxious to share this news with you. Tonight we are celebrating the Honorable James S. Watson. And Honorable Watson is a Spanishtonian, as we would call him in Jamaica, because he was born in Spanish Town in 1852. But before I tell you all about his accomplishments, what I'd like to do is to read from the Dr. Lumsden's page that I really discovered him. And what brought me to this is because I always love to explore Dr. Lumsden's material, because she has a lot of things that have not been documented anywhere else. So what really struck me on this one, this is from her pages for the Jamaican History Month of 2007, and there was a quote from the Gleaner of 1934, September 4th, 1934. And it was written by Mr. Jacob Hume Stewart. And he was talking about the Honorable Watson. And he said, "I am sure, gentlemen, that when the history of our brilliant sons of Jamaica comes to be written up, the name of Jim Watson will go into the archives of the records as one of our worthy sons, a worthy Spanishtonian." And then I discovered that Mr. Wilson, I'll just say Mr. Wilson now, but you know that he was the Honorable George Wilson. But let me tell you first about some of his accomplishments, and then I'll go into the details of his life, because really I find it so intriguing. So if there's any listeners online that would like to interact, as you know, I think it will tell you right online that you should call 718-766-4558. And I want to thank you for being there. I'm not able to interact with you in the chat room, but I'm still working on that. I'm hoping to get someone who will help me to be my co-host so they can do the chatter while I do the reading. If you're on my list, then you know that I do this every Thursday where we celebrate in the backyard. We celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And so let me give you a little bit about the timeline of this very worthy Spanishtonian. He was born in 1882 in Spanishtown. In 1905, he went to New York, where he became a judge. He was elected to office. He became a citizen in 1913. Now, let me give you the timeline as I really have it written down. I'm getting ahead of myself. He was born in 1982. In 1905, he migrated to New York. In 1908, he started to take his high school diploma. In 1910, he graduated high school in New York. Between 1910 and 1913, he took night classes to become a lawyer. In 1913, he became a citizen. By then, he was 34. In 1914, he was admitted to the New York bar. In 1917, he got married. In 1920, he worked with a law firm while he went back to school to get his law degree. In 1920, he became a special assistant, and in 1930, he ran for office in New York. He was elected. In 1940, he was reelected. In 1943, he became the first African-American to become a member of the American Bar Association, and that was he was the first one since 1912. I'm going to give you all these details later on. But in 1950, he retired, and he passed away. He died in 1952. Now, I came to this country in 1959, so by that time, he was not around anymore. But I really, really didn't know anything about this wonderful man until I was doing some, I would say, browsing on Dr. Lumsden's site and came across all of this wonderful information. And then, of course, I got some additional information at other sites once I saw it on her site and heard what this man said about him in 1931, which was before I was born. Anyway, let me give you some more details. He was born in Spanishtown on May 29th in 1982. His father was James Michael Watson, and he was a sergeant in the Jamaica Constabulary Force and later worked for the Jamaica Government Railway as a conductor and a platform foreman. His mother was Elizabeth Jones Watson. And my sidebar, I like to call all the names of these people because I am sure that there's some descendants, well, I know for sure that there's some descendants of Mr. Samuel Watson, James Samuel Watson, but I'm talking about even his mother, because his mother was Jones before she became a Watson. Now, I have found some extra on Dr. Lumsden's page, and it is Dr. Lumsden's page is, I'll give you the URL of the website. It is Jamaica History Month of 2007. And if you just Google that, you will get to her page very easily. And I really, really am so grateful to her for all the work she continues to do in this type of research. Because although, you know, a lot of this is on the internet, it's really these historians that bring it to our attention as Jamaicans in the diaspora. So let me just give you a little background about what Backyard Lab is all about if you are new to the backyard. And here I know that I am a senior citizen. As a matter of fact, I call myself a senior because I'm quite up there. But I just have a love for the new technology, and, you know, I have a little know-how, not a lot. But I'm using what I have to what I call putting a voice to some of this wonderful material that has been prepared for us. Because I know with the technology the way it is today, you can find out anything you want by just Googling it. But a lot of people just don't have the time because they're busy with so many other things, and I know that a lot of people don't like to read. So with this kind of approach, you can listen while you do something else. You know, as they say now, you can multitask. So you can listen to the information while you check your email or, you know, work around your house, because your speakers will bring the voice over. And all the shows are archived by Blog Talk Radio. So, you know, I've been doing the shows for a couple of years, and there's some very interesting information that you might not know about your fellow Jamaicans. So let me get back now to the meat of the story. So here we have Mr. It doesn't say if he was the only child or anything in this information, but we know that his mother and father lived in Spanish Town, where he was born. So it now says that his mother's name was Elizabeth Watson Jones. Now, he attended elementary school in Spanish Town. And he worked as a bookkeeper and a cashier. I think he worked at the Myrtle Bank Hotel. And some of the older Jamaicans might be familiar with the Myrtle Bank Hotel as a cashier and chief clerk. Now, in June of 1905, he arrived in New York and spent much of his time over the next 5 years advancing his education in New York and Harlem. I think he lived in Harlem. I don't see any real documentation on that. But can you imagine him being in New York in 1905? But he seemed to have been a very ambitious and industrious young man, because he was 23 years old when he came to New York. It doesn't say if he had any family or how he came. But when he got up there, the first thing he did was to register. He really wanted to further his education, so he started to take classes to get his high school diploma. But he also got himself a job, and he worked with a law firm. He was working in this law firm, and the name of it was House Grossman and Vorhaus, Vosh, I suppose. I don't really know how to pronounce it. And that law firm was located at 115 Broadway. And he worked there as a clerk from 1910 to 1913. But he took night classes at both the City College of New York and the New York Law School. And there he was able to receive his law degree in 1913. Now, you know, we know that is quite an accomplishment for a young man coming to New York during those periods. So and at the same time, in 1913, when he received his law degree, he also became a United States citizen. It didn't say which came first. He became a citizen on July 3rd in 1913. He didn't say what month he got his law degree. But we know that he got them both. He did both those things in 1913. And according to my papers, that made him, he was still quite young. Where's my paper? Here he is. So in 1913, he was 34. Now, in 1914, just the year after, he was admitted to the New York bar. And in 1917, he got married to a fellow Jamaican from New Jersey. So she was born and raised in Jamaica too. And my plan is to do a story on the family next week. Because this man was not only an outstanding citizen, he was an outstanding father and did a lot of things for the community during his time in New York. So we know that there is really a lot to celebrate, especially now as we are about to celebrate our 50th independence. I see that I have a caller on the board, 718-379, and I want to welcome you and invite you to touch one on your telephone whenever you feel like so you can join the Labrish. We had a little technical difficulty earlier in the show and was not able to get online. So for the people who might be listening on their computers and want to call in, you know, you can now call in because everything seems to be working right. And I see a hand up at 718-379, so I'm going to happily open the mic for that caller and welcome them. Good evening. You got Margaret in the backyard.
And you got Lay in the Bronx.
Well, hello, Mr. Lay in the Bronx.
Yes,
welcome
I
to the
thought,
backyard. Did you call in earlier?
I did call, and I was a little bit disappointed that maybe you weren't going to be on, and I am trying again and happily rewarded.
Oh, well, I'm so thankful because we were having technical difficulty. I think I had a lightning strike here and it sort of...
Well, I think you better move from that lightning-prone area.
No. Well, you know, I think it's just all over.
Just
but you should be very thrilled tonight because I'm really celebrating a New Yorker.
Yes, well, I was interested in that, and I thought I would listen in. And
yes.
It seems like I got in pretty much when you just started, did you?
Right. I really just started, and these people were before our time, but their stories are really, really so interesting.
Yes,
and
you mentioned how difficult it was in those times. Even in my time, when I decided to go to university here and did some summer courses, we had no air conditioning in the building, and doing night studies was not easy.
Right.
So for a law student, it could be even doubly harder.
Yes, because, you know, apparently he did not have any secondary education in Jamaica, as we would have called it then, or during our time, because it just mentioned that he went to elementary school in Spanish Town and then worked, you know, as a clerk at the Myrtle Bank Hotel.
Yeah.
So now he travels to New York in 1905.
Right.
Can you imagine that? And there he got a job. He got a job right away. I mean, he's really quite industrious.
Yeah.
So he graduated from high school, which in 1910.
Mm-hmm.
And he started working with this law firm, which was on Broadway, as a clerk. And he, right after he graduated high school, he started with them because he started with them in 1910.
Yeah.
But he not only started with them, he also started to take classes for his law degree.
Right.
Now, I am sure that at that time in this particular law firm, perhaps he was the only black clerk.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just coincidental that I was doing pre-law in New York when in the 50s. And what was amusing, well, it really wasn't amusing because I had, you know, prior education. And the thing was that the law firm that I tried to gain employment would not employ me because I couldn't type. You know, he started as a clerk there, the point where most beginners would start, but they wouldn't employ me because I didn't know how to type.
Interesting.
So I did 3 weeks of typing at Erasmus Hall, which is prestigious high school in Brooklyn, because that's where a lot of the movie stars, you know, like Barbara Streisand and some of these stars went to school. Nonetheless, I got 3 weeks of typing in and was able to gain employment during
was
the summer.
Was able to pick your way through.
So it was amusing. He must have had a time of it.
But listen, actually, I was wrong because he started before he graduated high school. He started with them in 1908.
Yeah, that's even more.
To work with the law firm.
Yeah, that's more extraordinary because, you know, you don't get into law firms just, they have to see potential in whoever is.
Yes. So it was obvious that he really had it.
Yeah.
So then he worked there as a clerk from 1910. It says here from 19. He started really in 1908, but he even worked there after he got his degree.
Yes.
I mean, this is really so interesting. So he took night classes at City College. I said that already, and also the law school, from which he received his degree in 1913. He became a United Citizen in 1913. He was admitted to the Bar of New York in April 1914, and the next month was admitted to practice before the United States District Court for the Southern District of New York.
Yeah, it's moving pretty rapidly.
Very fast. Watson remained at the law firm and became a lawyer with them, and he became the head of their Department of Corporate and Tax Laws. Isn't that something? Talking about working your way up.
Yep.
From not even having graduated high school to being in charge of being the head of a department in those days. So, you know, that alone is a big accomplishment.
All right.
So in 1920 now, he and two other black attorneys, S.T. Christian and J.E. Stevens, founded their own law firm where he would practice until 1930, so for 10 years. Now, in 1922, he became Special Assistant Corporation Counsel to New York City in the Special Franchise Tax Division. So apparently, because he was involved with the previous law firm, you know, the one he started with,
yep,
as head of their department in taxes, it made him more suited for this special assignment that he got.
Sure.
So talk about, you know, he was really, really focused.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is during 1920s now. Remember, now he now has his own law firm.
Yeah.
He represented Marcus Garvey during the 1920s.
Uh-huh.
And in 1930, along with another black attorney, Charles E. Toney, T-O-N-E-Y, he was elected to the New York State, as a New York State judge. They were the first two black judges in the state of New York.
Yeah.
He served as a judge until his retirement in 1950. But listen to this. He ran for election. He was elected. Let me get my papers right here now. He became special assistant in 1922, and in 1930, he ran for office
as a judge. This is the difficult part, because in those days, it wasn't easy to gain any kind of access into political parties, especially the Democratic Party, because they had, it was sort of rigged in plain language. They had to confront the Tammany Hall, and I can remember the days when you don't get anywhere unless you do what they say.
Mm.
And even then, they were backing the Irish immigrants. You know, if you notice that every judge in those days, the names were Irish, and this is one of the reasons. I'm talking about the elected judges, because
right
to get Tammany Hall's blessing before you can go anywhere. And this is what he was would be up against. I mean, a guy from Jamaica is going to come up against Tammany Hall, you know.
Well, it would take a Jamaican.
Yes.
To this. In 1940, he was running, and the Democratic Party would not back him.
Right.
It says here, one of my documents here. Yes, that's what I'm saying. That said, that you're talking about. A nonpartisan citizens committee was formed in support of his election.
Let
me read from the beginning of this. In 1940, Judge Watson was denied the Democratic nomination for re-election in spite of the unanimous endorsement of the Association of the Bar of the City of New York and the New York County Lawyers Association.
Right.
A nonpartisan citizens committee was formed in support of his election. Eventually, under pressure, Tammany Hall backed him and he was nominated.
There you go.
Listen to this. Judge Watson won re-election, running ahead of the rest of the Democratic ticket by a margin of 9-1.
Mm.
Isn't that something?
I mean, that in those days was big time, really.
Of course, big time. But isn't it amazing it's in 1931 that he went back to Jamaica, and he was really being celebrated by his peers out there at the time. And I want to, so that's when that Gleno report came out.
Okay.
You know, the one that mentioned about him, his name being, you know, such an honorary Spanishtonian. And I'm just reading this and said, isn't this pathetic? Because you know, I don't know if a lot of people knew about him, but I know I didn't. So I'm so glad I stumbled on this. But I want to share with you part of what, as recorded in the Gleen of September 4th, 1935, a fine banquet was held in his honor in Spanish Town, put on by his old friend Jacob Hume Stewart. He's the same one that made the statement that I read. A prominent black businessman, this is in Jamaica we're talking about, at his hotel, Marble Hall, M-A-R-B-L-E, Hall. Have you ever heard of that hotel?
Yes, I've heard of it.
Okay. The Costas and the MLC, I don't know what that means, of St. Catherine were among the numerous distinguished guests. Also present was Charles Milton Hinchcliffe, Judge Watson's eldest stepbrother, to whom he paid tribute for his sound advice and good example when he was growing up. The two men were enthusiastically entertained at Kensington Club by the Imperial Association, out of respect and admiration for their achievement. In 1917, James Watson had married Violet May Lopez of Christiana in New Haven, Connecticut. His bride had come to America in 1915. Her sister, Nessa, N-E-S-S-A, who also went to the States, married Charles Llewellyn, and there were the parents of J. Bruce Llewellyn, one of the most successful African-American businessmen in New York. The families were also related to Colin Powell's family. The Watson's children were as remarkable as the rest of the families. So we know that he must have been a wonderful father, but you can tell because he was from a family of strong citizens, Jamaican citizens. So it's really quite impressive. But I wanted to give you a little more information before we get off the air. It's a short show tonight because half of the time I was not online. But it's really, really something else because quite a few of his offsprings are, you know, still doing wonderful things. So as Judge James Austin was involved, he was involved in several landmark cases. The most often noted in his his decision in 1934 in the case brought against the North German Lloyd Steamship Company by a bondholder in that company when he ruled that a German government moratorium on interest payments to bondholders was not binding. His decision was upheld by the higher court. He was honored in 1938 for his record of public service by a testimonial dinner from the New York City Bar Association. Isn't that something? In 1934, he became the first African-American lawyer admitted to the American Bar Association since 1912, when three black lawyers had been admitted because their race was not known. After that, applicants were required to state their race, and no African Americans were admitted until Watson. Ain't that something?
Oh, yeah.
It is such interesting information. But as I always say, you know, it takes a Jamaican. And with their tenacity and, oh, my goodness, and just their spirit and their passion for whatever it is they're doing. But I didn't know that we had the first black, the first Jamaican, the first black person in the Bar Association is a Jamaican. I mean, there are so many times that we are first. It's just amazing. So let me tell you a little bit now about his civic activities. He was active in various civic organizations, including, among others, the New York Urban League, the Prince Hall Masons, and the YMCA. He was also involved in West Indian organizations and was awarded the CBE, which has something to do with the king. Let me read that here. He was cited on the last birthday honors list of King George V of England for appointment as a commander of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire in recognition of his work for the welfare of the West Indians, and he received this award just before his death. Isn't that something? So he was a member of the New York County Lawyers Association, the National Bar Association, and Board of Managers of the YMCA. And he and his wife had four children. They had four children. I think it's two boys and two girls. So the story is about, you know, his son was the first judge in something else, which I'll talk about next week. But he was born in America. You know, these people were, his son was born in Harlem. I think they lived in Harlem at the time. Yeah. But now he died pretty young because he was just 70. He died in 1952. What year did you come here, Leigh?
1952.
Ah, well, that's the year he died.
Yeah.
He died in 1952, and his funeral took place at St. Martin's Episcopal Church in Harlem, where he had been a long devoted member. Thousands, including most high-ranking city officials and civic leaders attended the service.
Yeah, I read it where 3,000 people came to the funeral.
Yes, and the interment at Woodlawn Cemetery. Thousands more watched the funeral procession, a befitting farewell to a devoted public servant and a fine human being. So I am sure that the writer of that, you know, that was published in the Gleaner in 1931,
mm-hmm.
was so correct because, you know, I don't know how old that man was and if he lived to see all the accomplishments of the Honorable James Watson, but he's really somebody that people in the diaspora should know about, and because we can be really so proud. Because, you know, he left such a legacy because all of his children became the first in this, the first in that. And I don't want to jump ahead of myself because next week we're going to talk about his children. You know, one went on to be in aeronautics. One went on to law. One went on to being an ambassador from Malaysia. I mean, just interesting stuff. Really, really great. So
yeah.
I am really, really so thrilled to have discovered this. And as I think he should be in one of the Diaspora Hall of Fame as a Jamaican.
Definitely.
Because this is really a trailblazer to, you know, to come here at such a young age. He was only 23. And not only that, not having secondary education when he came.
I was just about to say that nowadays it seems like it's chic to say that education is not all that important. But,
uh-huh.
you know, we know better than that.
Of course. Because,
yeah.
you know, knowledge can never be erased. You
yeah.
cannot erase that. You know, you cannot unlearn something. So I don't know how anybody you know, can believe that education is not important. It has to be. So anyway, you know, he really was, there was something else I wanted to say about him here. I'm trying to find it on my notes. But, you know, one thing I know that at the time when he was doing his thing, he not only made, I'm sure, his family and his friends in Jamaica proud, but people of color all over the United States. As I went through the documentation, I found newspapers, you know, black newspapers in different cities, both north and south, all over the United States, that were lauding him. He was traveling to different places to give talks and speeches and encouragement, you know, in Chicago, just all over. And people were it just made the people of color so proud. Because remember, this documentation says, apparently what I read into that, that the three attorneys that were admitted in the association before he was could pass for white. They didn't know that they had any black in them, or they didn't have to, apparently they didn't have the race thing on the form during that period.
One of the main things.
Right,
and then,
and once those three got in, they decide to make sure that the race question was on the application to become a member of the association.
Yeah.
And nobody was let in before him.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how the Democrats, they say, there was one mention of a name that I think we know. I'm trying to see the papers on that. Because, you know, part of where I get some of the additional information beside Dr. Lumsden is just all over the internet, you know, the Wikipedia, just different places. But I also found several newspapers that were talking about a dinner that he attended or, you know, somebody, some organization having some affair to honor him. So he was honored for, you know, the work he was doing, not necessarily for New York alone, just all over the country. He was like a star all over the country. He was traveling to give talks, and he seemed very civic-minded, you know, and was very involved in, as it mentioned here, in the West Indian Association as well as the YMCA, which in those days, you know, the YMCA was very helpful and very popular for young people that were in transit or came from other countries or things like that. You know, it's one thing to be focused on your career and just you, but it's even something else when you support and share and give back. And it's quite obvious that for King George to give him the honor of commander of the most excellent order, he had to be, you know, quite prominent. And
when you consider that in his earlier days back in Jamaica, he was actually in the army.
Mm-hmm.
He was a sergeant in the army. Anyway, did you read that?
No, I didn't see that part. You saw that?
Yes, I saw that. This is before he started any, you know, rise to anything else.
Wow, that's good. I know that it said his father. Did it say his father was in the police force? What was his father?
Something like that, yeah.
Yes, his father was in the police force, but I didn't see the part about that. But, you know, in those days, you know, fathers were very strict in bringing up their, especially the boys, with discipline, and education was everybody's priority. It was everybody's priority, no matter what level of the society you were. Education was everybody's priority. Rich, poor, black, white, Indian, Chinese, it didn't matter. It was during those times that was the most important aspect. And everybody was focused at every level of the society on education for their children. I don't. Pardon?
I said right, because, you know, if the parents wanted a better life for their children, the primary thing to do would be to educate them, you know.
Right, right.
If they possibly could.
Mm-hmm. That said, it's 9 o'clock, and I hope we covered everything, but I really enjoyed just, you know, discovering all these details about him. I don't remember if you remember when we did the show on Marcus Garvey. We did a show on Marcus Garvey some time ago.
We did.
And I know that he had representation for some case here. But
yeah.
I don't know if it was mentioned that it was Judge Watson.
It probably was just focused on Garvey and all the hot water that he used to get into.
Right,
and
right.
He got into a lot of trouble along
right.
the way. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I cannot imagine that this particular story had missed me for so long. And I am really, really so happy that I discovered it. You know, because I do a lot of stories that go in 17-something. But he was closer, you know, to our time. And he was at least the same year you came here. And apparently he wasn't sick for a long time, from what I am reading. And incidentally, it mentioned in one of the documents I saw that I think the mayor of New York, who had an Italian name, was one of the pallbearers when he passed away.
Was it LaGuardia, Cirilla LaGuardia? One of those
that
guys.
That sounds familiar, yes. But, you know, they say every high-ranking city official and civil leader was at this man's funeral. Yes, his name is spelled Vincent, and his last name is spelled IMPELLITERI.
Yeah,
you're familiar with him.
Yes, I remember that, yeah.
Right. So, it's, you know, but we have some really, really good information on his children and their accomplishments. And I would categorize them or call them Jamaicans. Because he was truly a Jamaican. You know, when he came up here, he was a man.
Yeah.
He was 23 when he migrated to the United States. It didn't say how he came or why he came. And apparently he met his wife here.
Right.
You know, he didn't say that they knew each other before in Jamaica. He was, let me see how old, he was 35 when he got married, actually.
Yeah.
So he was quite mature. But, you know, just starting out, because it's really in 1920 when he started the law firm. So, you know, she really, they made a very excellent couple. There's a couple of stories about the children that I'm going to share next week. But I was very, very impressed that he won the election and outdid his opponents 9-1.
Well, you know, that alone is a big thing in his dossier, because don't forget, in those days, who you're fighting against, you know?
Right. Yep. The politics was just so bad.
Unbelievable, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure he was a Democrat, but the Democratic Party didn't want to endorse him.
Right. I mean, the Democratic Party, the Tammany-run party, was tough on anybody unless they sanctioned him. And even the Bar Association carries a lot of weight, and they couldn't swing it the first time around with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just goes to show you how hard it was.
Right.
Because he had the whole a whole legal representation behind him. But he had to work hard to get by the Tammany Hall bosses.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, it says here that is his wife, along with Mary McLeod, Violet Lopez Watson, was one of the founders of the National Council of Negro Women. So his wife was quite active, too. And there was something else about the person from Bethune College here. What's the name of that girl's school, I think? Bethune Cookman is what is the name of that school?
I don't know.
Oh, anyway, you know, they were both seemed quite civic-minded and were really doing their thing as they were raising their children. So next week's story is going to be about his son, who actually had the same name except a different middle name. So it gets a little confusing sometimes. And he had a sister who did some wonderful things too. So we're going to talk about them next week. And I hope to find some other people that we haven't discovered yet to celebrate as we go into the 50th, which is coming up real soon.
Yep.
So with that said, Mr. Lay from the Bronx, I want to thank you for being in the backyard with me. It's sort of lonely tonight. I think we had quite a few callers before we got disconnected, or during the time I was disconnected. But they can come to the archives, and for those who come by later to listen to the show, we hope you enjoy it. And all of this information, if you just Google it, you will get the additional things that we might have left out. But we hope to see you next week, because we're here each Thursday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica. Mr. Lay, land
we love.
Thank you, and I hope to see you next week. Bye.
Good night.
Night.
Oh.
And as I always say, make it a great week.
Right.
Bye.
Night.